Hi, I'm Hannah.
Hi, I'm Rochelle, and this is FoxFox F1 Pod. Today, we're doing the much-anticipated and much-voted-for review of Talladega Nights. But before we get into that, it's time for our digital roundup.
So, unsurprisingly, another Grand Prix is cancelled. This time, it's the Australian Grand Prix in Melbourne. We don't know what is replacing it, but that happened. In other news, Yuki had a little, like, video conference with his fans, and a great phrase came out of it, because, as everyone knows, Yuki loves to eat. And he said he goes full send, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And honestly, I love that energy. It's like, you only live once, gotta go full send on every meal in your life.
I agree. I think it might be a bit of an issue when you're a Formula One driver and your weight is of paramount importance.
Yeah.
But clearly that's not an issue for Yuki.
Not yet. His metabolism is that of a young boy, so he can just go full send and he's still light as a feather.
I think the rest of them are also young boys.
Not all of them. There's a senior citizen center that needs to be fit.
I forgot about the retirement center on track. Yeah. All right. So in other news, or in repeating news, George Russell is still up for potential replacement of the D2 seat at Mercedes. Nothing's been confirmed. They've been playing coy all season. But recently, a lot of rumors have been swirling around. Lots of fake news has been coming out. But it seems that one of the most official rumors is that it will be announced at Silverstone. So next week, fingers crossed, that we finally get the news and everyone can calm down. But one of the most absurd things to come out of all of this is today, George posted on his Instagram page couple of pictures of him washing his Mercedes and captioned it, "Take care of the things you love."
Yes. And as Rochelle always says, when George does things, it always screams, "Look at me, Toto, look at me."
I love Mercedes. Woo!
Yeah, it was a bit much.
A little on the nose.
Yes, like especially with all this fake news swirling around, he's just feeding into the hype.
Yes, and to be fair, most of the comments are like, this is on purpose, right? Like,
yeah,
this is
like
not...
he has to see it.
Yeah, he can't be that stupid.
But the question is, will Toto see it?
Toto's not on Instagram, and he did not hashtag Toto Wolf.
Oh, and Toto definitely won't see it.
He did tag the F1 Mercedes account, not the regular Mercedes account, which would have made sense more. He tagged the F1 account, so he's trying.
We shall see, hopefully next weekend.
Yes. That's the end of our digital roundup, and now we're moving on to our review of Talladega Nights.
So, for a very brief overview, this movie came out in 2006, and it was a box office hit. However, it was mostly a hit in America. And that makes sense, because this movie is a parody of NASCAR and Southern culture. And the basic premise is that the NASCAR driver that's the main character in this movie is challenged significantly when an F1 driver from France enters NASCAR. And just to tie this back to actual F1, there have been previous F1 drivers who have entered NASCAR, and the most famous switch was Juan Pablo Montoya, because it was a pretty dramatic announcement. Like, I think mid-season, he was driving for McLaren and then left for NASCAR.
Is his name actually Juan Pablo Montoya?
Yes, and he goes by JPM, which gives me JPJ vibes from The Bachelor.
Yeah, it really does.
Yeah, no, he's like Colombian.
It sounds like a fake name.
Could be.
I think it's because it's the same name from Princess Bride, where he's like, "My name is something Montoya, I killed your father, prepare to die."
Yes. So yeah, he had the most famous switch just because of the drama around it, but there were other switches. And also, of the current 2021 F1 drivers, two drivers have notably dabbled in NASCAR for a little bit. When Kimi Raikkonen lost his Ferrari seat after the 2009 season, he went on sabbatical, they say, because he tried a bunch of different racing competitions. I think most notably the World Rally Championship, but he also did a few NASCAR races, and very signature Kimi on the radio, he screamed, "I don't understand how this car can be so hot. My ass is even burning in here." So Kimi did not do well in his NASCAR races.
Who can when they're so hot?
Yeah, but he did say it's not out of the question after he retires from F1 that he would go back to like dabble in NASCAR some more.
Surely Indy 500 makes more sense.
No, yeah, I don't think he was saying just NASCAR. I think it's just like a fun thing for like F1 drivers to go try everything.
Yeah, fair. And
just have a blast.
Aren't all the cars hot though? Or is the open cockpit really that benefit? Like, does the cool air really help as they fly by?
I think it really helps. Okay. I think it really helps. I mean, if the temperature is nice out, I'm sure the breeze and the wind distracts your ass from burning. But I don't know. We'll have to ask Kimi.
All right. Put it on the list.
Yeah. The other driver who dabbled in NASCAR for one race was Lewis Hamilton. He swapped seats for a race with NASCAR legend Tony Stewart in 2011. And Lewis really enjoyed that as well and said, "It just feels like I'm a kid again. It feels so fun." So Lewis also didn't rule out trying out more NASCAR races in the future.
Sounds also like he has a more temperature-controlled butt. He seemed to handle that a bit better.
Yep, we'll have to ask Lewis. But that's all. Okay, into the movie. There's three main characters, and the first, of course, is Ricky Bobby, who's played by Will Ferrell. And Ricky Bobby was born to go fast because the opening scene of the movie, he's born in a really fast car that haltingly screeches, and so he's popped out of his mother.
It was truly appalling.
And Ricky's dad is not a great dad. He doesn't see him for 10 years, and like in elementary school, his dad shows up one day to career day, and his dad is a semi-professional NASCAR driver, and he says to all the children at the school for career day, "It's the fastest who gets paid, and and it's the fastest who gets laid." And the school children scream in delight.
Yes, and I also got hardcore James Hunt vibes from that sentiment, though James Hunt seemed to have a better follow-through and success as a race car driver.
Well, so Ricky's dad, Reese Bobby, he brings the fun to NASCAR, which doesn't amount to any success whatsoever.
Mostly because I don't think he ever actually made it to NASCAR.
Yeah, no, barely. He did drugs and was a heavy drinker and just, yeah, has zero follow through in fatherhood or on the track.
The motto he leaves is, "If you ain't first, you're last."
Yeah, I mean, that's one approach to life, but that really sticks with Ricky.
Yes, it sort of guides the rest of his life.
Yeah, because his dad leaves career day and says, "I'll see you when you're grown up." And so Ricky Bobby has major daddy issues.
Major. Yeah.
And then Ricky's best friend since childhood is Cal Naughton Jr. And he ends up becoming Ricky's second driver. And we'll get more into him later because he has some struggles. And then I would say my favorite character, and I'm sure yours as well, is Jean Girard, who's played by Sacha Baron Cohen. And he's an openly gay French F1 driver who enters NASCAR and becomes Ricky's new rival.
Which I assume means he's just not a very good F1 driver or on his way out.
Yeah.
I expected a better French accent from Sacha Baron Cohen, but I guess that's also part of the... That was on purpose, I think.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
But I guess it does actually play to the stereotypes of every... Like, I feel like Jean Girard is playing what the quintessential NASCAR fan views an F1 driver as.
Exactly, exactly. Which is slightly offensive.
Just
yeah, so those are the three main characters. And then the story opens with the first race for Ricky. Ricky starts out as a pit crew member changing tires, but then he becomes a driver for the Laughing Clown team, which is dead last because their driver is going to eat a sandwich mid-race. And Ricky actually does relatively well. And so then he gets picked up by Wonder Bread.
Just wondering if a pit crew member could actually just, like, hop into a car.
I don't think so for, like, safety reasons. But who knows? It's NASCAR. And they were the last team, so I don't know if anyone cared. But
that's true.
That's how he actually got to go fast for the first time in his life. And he loved it. And, yeah, he kind of became a big deal, like, got a major sponsor, and he pulled a Reganozzi because his best friend Cal was also a pit crew member, and he demanded that Cal get signed on his team to be his second driver, and Cal got sponsored by Old Spice.
My two least favorite things about America.
Yeah. In 2006, Old Spice was, like, major. You know, like for young boys.
I actually gag at the smell.
Yeah, it's too old and too spicy.
They did have great commercials, though. The man on that floor, was good. As long as I don't have to smell it, I'm good.
Exactly.
And, yes, also, I think it's important to note that someone said to Ricky, it seems like, or no, one of the announcers was like, Ricky's always trying to win. And if he's not winning, he's crashing the car, basically. The point of that was that Ricky was an extremely reckless driver. Very fast, but quite reckless and seemed, like, unconcerned by the fact that he was basically bumper carring his way up the field.
Yes. And that really takes a toll on him later.
Yes.
So, when we first see the race with Ricky and Cal driving together, there's a move called the slingshot, which I guess actually exists in NASCAR. And Cal basically lets Ricky come up right behind him and then lets him use his slipstream to blast ahead. So this doesn't happen in Formula One because there's rarely a case where the second driver is that giving. I mean, of course there's passes, but it comes from a team order.
Like, slipstreaming happens. Like, you can tow on someone. What doesn't happen is that you attach the bumper of your car to the back of their car for, like, a boost.
Yeah, NASCAR cars are far more sturdy and able to slingshot people. If you grabbed onto the bumper of a Formula One car, I'm pretty sure it would disintegrate. They're gentle. Yeah, exactly. After Cal slingshots Ricky in the race, they end up going to a dive bar called The Pit Stop.
Brilliant.
If there was a bar called Pit Stop near where I lived, I would just go there every day.
It is truly probably the greatest thing to come from this movie.
Yes, I don't know why no one has done it.
Same. Or at least, like, you know, like, you can call the food area at Grand Prix the pit stop.
Yeah. That's brilliant. I love that.
Okay.
But yeah, so at the bar, Cal tries to bring up very timidly that he doesn't like being a second driver as much because he's like, you know, what would be really awesome? Maybe if you could slingshot me for a win. And then Ricky goes, but if you win, how would I win?
That's true. He brings up a great point.
Yeah, and then Cal's like, Yeah, that I did think about that. And then Ricky's like, there's nothing wrong with silver.
Oh, man. Tale as old as time.
Yes.
The worst part for me was Cal going, I'll just bury it down inside. And Ricky goes, deep down.
Yes, and that reminded me of the interview Bottas gave in Drive to Survive when he said, when Lewis beats me, it's like twisting a knife in me.
Yes. God, that really is painful to read.
Yeah, no, like, clearly the vibe I'm getting from these second drivers who think they can do a lot better but are forced to support their first driver is it's incredibly painful, and but they have to repress it as much as possible.
Yes. And this is also why there are rarely best friends in F1.
Yeah.
Like, you can't be best friends with your teammates.
Yeah, exactly. So, basically, at the pit stop, jazz music starts playing, which leads to, I think, the best scene in this movie.
Yeah.
Right?
Also, I don't know why it's jazz music.
I don't know. It's just is so different that Ricky Bobby's like, turn that trash off.
Someone starts blinking really hard, like they're like, I can't process this.
And then they're like, why does this jukebox have jazz? And the owner says, for profiling purposes. Which I love.
Same. And then he mentioned some other songs on there that they put on for profile.
They have, like, Seal.
Yes. And they put another, like, a British boy band on there also to profile. But also, jazz is from America.
Yeah, like bluegrass.
Yeah, it's from New Orleans. It's not from France.
No, I think it has some origins in France, but it was very much adapted and popularized in America.
Wikipedia says it originated in New Orleans. New Orleans has French origins.
Exactly. That's what I was just going to say. So who knows? But anyways, some jarring jazz music plays, and then we get introduced to Jean Girard from Formula Un.
Which he actually says like that.
Yes.
Formula. Yep. I got Cyril vibes. Yes. Not offensively to Cyril, but it just reinforces what me and Hannah have been saying forever now, that Cyril is just a walking stereotype of a Frenchman. And clearly, that's who Jean Girard was modeled after.
Yes. Very exaggerated version of Cyril. And his French accent is so bad and thick that it sounds like peanut butter on the roof of his mouth, and they can't understand a thing he's saying.
It's kind of accurate.
Yeah, and then the
in terms of how Americans react to foreign accents.
Yeah, exactly. And I think the best part of this scene is the mini culture war they get into between America and France. Jean Girard asks, what did America create other than George Bush, Cheerios, and the Thigh Master?
And they counter with, well, what did France create? To which Jean replies, democracy, existentialism, and the ménage à trois.
And Cal goes, well, those are three pretty good things. And some rando in the back says, America created the missionary position. But yeah, no, it highlights both America and France have extreme pride, which gets into the first race between Ricky and Jean, because Ricky's sponsored by Wonder Bread and Jean is sponsored by Perrier. It also is mentioned that Ricky sold his windshield to Fig Newtons. And what I really liked was Ricky's behind Jean, because Jean's actually a really good NASCAR driver, I guess, so he's in the front. And Ricky's like, where's Pepe Le Bitch? And it shows Jean in his car listening to opera and sipping a macchiato while racing in the front, which really highlights the benefit of driving in a closed cockpit in NASCAR versus in an open cockpit if he were back in F1, because you certainly can't be sipping espresso in there.
No, but you could be listening to op. Have you ever gotten an MRI?
Yes.
So you know how they... So when you get an MRI, they put headphones on you and you get to pick the music you want to listen to. And you listen to whatever you want. And then every so often they interrupt and they're like, this is what we're doing now. So really, I don't know why the drivers aren't listening to like jams while they're racing about.
Probably because they're getting important radio messages.
Well, they could interrupt the like
an MRI. Oh, yeah, I see what you're saying.
I don't know if it's distracting, but I really feel like it could pump them up. Something to think about for the FIA.
Yes. Basically, Ricky went into beast mode and flipped his car in the air. And I liked the announcer who said, that Wonder Bread is toast. And this crash is so devastating to both the car and Ricky's mind that it sets off Ricky's psychotic break.
Yes. And... by God, it is psychotic.
Yeah, no, he loses all grasp of reality, and an entire hour of this movie is dedicated to Ricky believing he's on fire, paralyzed, and on fire again, which then causes him to lose his seat, wife, and best friend. And then he goes to his mom's house, and his dad shows up, and then they help him get his life back together. And the one thing I did like about his dad coming back was his dad asked Ricky, how did stock car racing start? And Ricky goes, bootleggers during Prohibition who had to outrun the fans.
happened?
Yes.
Oh, I did. I missed that. I must have zoned out. I hated that part of the movie.
Yeah, no, it was during this hour of the movie that's truly unnecessary. And then to get Ricky back into racing... his dad tapes a kilo of cocaine, and he also calls it Colombian Bam Bam, under his car and called the cops on him. So then Ricky gets chased by the cops, and he gets his groove back.
Yeah, the fear is knocked out of him. I do want to say that this hour of absurdity of him, like, his mental breakdown and recuperating, yada yada, Daniel Ricciardo did a... I think it was GQ, where he had to review a bunch of racing movies or talk about a bunch of racing movies. And the scene they showed him from this film was when Ricky was running around and Cal was like, let me put out the invisible fire, blah, blah. And Daniel was like, I physically had to leave. Yeah. I had to leave the theater until and like come back because I could not watch it.
Yeah, it was very stupid, but also very Will Ferrell. Like, he loved stripping down into his whitey tighties and running around as a form of comedy.
That, yes, Will Ferrell loves a whitey tighty moment.
Yep. So, Ricky, you know, is back into NASCAR, and there's a final race in Talladega, and all the cars get completely wrecked. So then Jean and Ricky race by foot, and Ricky wins by a hand because they both dive at the finish line, and so his hand is ahead, but then they both get disqualified, so Cal actually wins by default and gets his winning moment he's been dying for.
I was very happy for him.
Yeah, me too. Everyone was. Everyone was happy, and then they went to go celebrate at Applebee's.
Yes. Because where else do you celebrate in America besides Applebee's?
Yeah, and they do poke fun at, like, they know Applebee's is shit, because, like, when they first go to Applebee's, it's, like, when Ricky finally feels, like, better, and they're like, let's go celebrate at a fantastic restaurant.
Very then, classy.
Yeah, and then it cuts to Applebee's, and then also they get kicked out, or his dad gets kicked out of Applebee's, and so he starts yelling at the Applebee's employees, and he's like, Applebee's sucks. I found a whole rat in my Cobb salad once. So they know.
One thing I would love to say, we're moving, now that we've finished the movie, the one thing I would love to say that I love about Will Ferrell is that his wife is Swedish. Her name is Viveka Pauline, I believe. And she has done, Viveka Pauline, and she has done an incredible job in culturing her husband. because this film, the Eurovision film that he did, he's very in the know about European culture. And also really in the know of how silly sometimes America looks in comparison. And he really satirizes that. And I really appreciate that. So I think the hero of this film, and really Will Ferrell's career, is Viveka.
Okay, so a few favorite moments we had of the movie. I mean, I think this is the most famous scene, is the Dear Lord Baby Jesus Grace. Which is a mix of, like, making fun of those really long graces that sometimes people have to sit through, especially in the South, and it just going on forever, but also corporate sponsorship.
Yes.
Because they start by saying, thank you, dear Lord Baby Jesus, for this bountiful harvest of Domino's, KFC, and the always delicious Taco Bell.
Yes, and then, not related to the sponsorships, but I do love the rant, the, like, side rant they all go on about how, why are you praying to baby Jesus? He, like, grew up and grew a beard. And he's like, baby Jesus is my favorite Jesus. And then him and Cal start spiffing on which Jesus they prefer and how they picture Jesus. And Cal pictures Jesus in a tuxedo t-shirt, which is just very... I think Jesus has a little more class.
Well, he likes to picture Jesus in a tuxedo t-shirt because it says, I want to be formal, but I'm here to party. And Cal says, and I like to party, so I like my Jesus to party.
I just really love how Christianity is very customizable.
Yes.
Jesus can be whatever you want him to be.
Jesus is in the eye of the beholder. But I think impressively that scene was mostly ad-libbed.
I'm not surprised. Yeah, they do a lot of movies together, right? Cal.
Yeah. Yeah, they did. Most famously, they did Step Brothers.
Right.
Yeah, Cal is played by John C. Reilly, I forgot to mention.
And then back to the sponsorship thing, at one point, once again, Will Ferrell mentions baby Jesus Christ and says, as stipulated in my contract with Powerade, I have to mention them during every grace. Which, again, money is king. Cash is king.
Yes. He says, I can't wait for your release of Mystic Mountain Blueberry. Which I love.
2006.
Yeah. The grandfather at this dinner is the only person who has a grasp on reality. And I think he's meant to be, like, the, like, not breaking the fourth wall, but basically with the audience, you know, being like, this is absurd.
Which is why he was my favorite character, because clearly I can't handle these kinds of movies. I was really drawn to the grandfather.
Yes, who was immediately attacked by the grandsons at the dinner. They were like, hey, how was your day? And the first one goes, I threw grandpa's war medals off a bridge. And then Chip, the grandfather, is like, you raised some idiots. And then they go, Chip, I'll go ape shit on your ass. I'm going to come at you like a spider monkey. I'm all jacked up on Mountain Dew. I hate them, but I thought they were hilarious.
I thought it was hilarious, but I also love their arc throughout the film.
Oh, when, yeah.
The grandmother does not tolerate things like the grandfather did. And she straightens these boys up. She sends them to church. She makes them clean up the side of the highway. And the very last scene in the film is them analyzing. And the boys just give, like, this full-fledged, like, analysis, like, straight out of, like, a college class. And it was very amusing to see their progression.
I liked how when their other grandfather, Reese Bobby, when he was causing a scene in Applebee's, one of the grandsons goes, grandfather, can't we resolve this conflict without violence?
One thing I was really sad to see was that the other grandfather didn't get to see this growth. I really thought he'd appreciate it.
Yeah, no, I love their arc as well.
Yeah. So, another thing that going off sponsorship, not sponsorships a bit, but like the whole like circus that is racing, and there's a lot of interviews, and you have to deal with the media all the time. And when Ricky raced his first race, he obviously had no media training, which is a huge part of the whole deal. And so the interviewer was like, "Where'd you learn to drive?" And Ricky's like, "A car." And the son of the owner of the team is like, "He's a stupid cowboy." And his father was like, "Driving has nothing to do with interviews." And that's so true. Like, who cares if you can do an interview or not? Kimmy can't do an interview to save his life. And he's 41 and still driving an F1 car.
Exactly. And also part of driving, or racing, that has nothing to do with actual racing, are some commercials that these drivers have to do for money. And the best commercial he does is, he says, "I'm Ricky Bobby. If you don't chew Big Red, then fuck you." Which is very Kimmy energy as well.
Yes. There was a whole montage of commercials. They were all, actually, I think the commercials were my favorite part.
Me too, because there's another one where he's just like speaking incoherent Chinese and then says, "Prune candy."
Yeah, it was great. And I love that bit. And then at the end, you could see them, they were ad-libbing the commercials.
Yes, they were dying. Like, Ricky and Cal were doing commercials together, and they just could not keep it together.
It's like, all, like, I think about it, and I'm like, I liked a lot of these moments, and I liked the general gist of it, but when I think it was the middle bit that really, I couldn't.
No, yeah, I think it has, like, a 70% rating on Rotten Tomatoes, and I think that's why.
Yeah.
They're like, it's good. It's better than a lot of bad movies, but it's
a great
room
bad
for
movie.
Yeah, room for improvement, but good job.
A plus, Will.
Yep. So that was Talladega Nights, and we thought that since so much of the movie includes commercial sponsorships, we would dive into sponsorships in F1.
Yeah. So I guess the best place to start is that the difference between F1 and NASCAR, and that's the most physically obvious difference, is that, like, as we saw, Ricky, Cal, and John all had completely different cars. Ricky was Wonder Bread, Cal was Old Spice, and John was Perrier. Why does that keep happening to me? John was Perrier. But they're all on the same team. They all have the same team owner. F1 and the FIA, as jacked up as they are on rules, does not allow that. The liveries of F1 cars all have to be the same. But the FIA has always enforced a bunch of absurd rules around sponsorship. They actually weren't allowed at the very beginning. All the cars were national colors. Ferrari was red. All the British teams were British Racing Green, which is where the term came from. And only there was like a little sticker on the bumper that symbolized any sort of relationship with commercial companies. A few years later, some small logos began appearing on driver suits, but these were only like car adjacent. So tire companies, oil companies, things that actually supplied products for the team. But in 1968, when all these companies began to withdraw because there was just no benefit for them to keep supplying all this free crap for F1 teams, that's when FIA had to change their rules. Liveries began to represent the biggest sponsors or the title sponsors, and it became like a fight for who can donate or who can sponsor with the most amount of money.
Yes. So now sponsors can buy different parts of the car that they want to put their ads on, basically. And so the rear wing of an F1 car costs about 17 million pounds?
Yeah.
Oh, for the whole season?
I think so.
Yeah, it costs 17 million pounds.
I don't know if they have to pay for each car, though. But the most noticeable one, Husky Chocolate is a sponsor for McLaren. They're on the wing of their rear wing of their car. I've never heard of Husky Chocolate. Have you?
Me neither. No.
Maybe it's European. I mean, I see it all the time. I've never actually Googled Husky Chocolate, so maybe they should reconsider where they put their money.
For each F1 team, there's a title sponsor that's like directly influencing their livery and the biggest presence on their cars, and they pay about £100 million. So the most noticeable example was BWT with Racing Point, because they demanded that they be bright bubblegum pink. And also one title sponsor change for this year was Haas, because their title sponsor is now Uralkali, which is a Russian fertilizer company partly owned by Mazepin's dad.
Yeah, it's in the Ural Mountains, which is why it's called Uralkali, like the Ural Mountains. And then Kali, I think, is a chemical in Russian. Do you buy fertilizer?
No, like this is true. I don't. Sometimes there's a question of who are these sponsorships aimed at? Your average F1 fan / normal consumer, or like governments and huge corporations? I think it's the latter, because a lot of these companies that are advertised are not exactly consumer goods.
Yeah, and I think that's what a lot of people, like when I was reading up on sponsorship, a lot of people are saying that's an issue with F1, is that they're not like adapting to the times.
Yeah.
Because they cost so much money to sponsor an F1 car that only specific kinds of companies can afford it. And before, like, the original sponsors of F1 cars were tobacco companies. So Marlboro.
You have to remember to not say the L.
Marlboro. All of them were sponsored by cigarette companies until 2006, when the EU passed a mandate that banned all tobacco sponsorships from any sporting events. And tobacco was obviously a consumer good, so it benefited them. It benefited the car. Like, it worked all around. But now, it's a little hard to find sponsors. Not all cigarette companies gave up, though. Philip Morris International, which owns Marlboro, refused to let go of their Ferrari sponsorship. So now they sublet that sponsorship to other companies. For a while, they used like a weird barcode design on the Ferrari cars, which made the FIA suspicious. So they launched an investigation and banned the barcode design.
Well, the reason why it was suspicious is because the barcodes were, so there were lines, obviously, but there were different colors. So the top was like red, and I think the bottom was like white, or like had a little bit of black. And so when you're just looking at it as a still, it looks like a barcode. But then if the cars are going really fast, which is what they do, it gets blurry and blends all in together to kind of resemble the Marlboro logo. And so they considered it subliminal messaging, and so it was banned.
Fair enough. I mean, Marlboro thought they could get away with it because they're like ish Italian colors. So they're like, no one will notice this. They were wrong. Then they returned with Mission Winnow, which has been mysteriously appeared on the Ferrari suits and the car, and that was basically, from what I understand, a shell company.
Yes, because their Mission Winnow's mission is nonsense. They're described as a change lab focused on reframing global conversations, sparking open debate, and connecting people and supporting the realization of innovative technologies. Which, that said nothing about anything. And Mission Winnow had an M logo, which is similar to Marlboro. So the FIA was like,
guys
own this M logo, which no one's going to think, oh, Mission Winnow. So they got banned as well.
Yeah, starting with any EU race. And they started with the French GP. So they were still using it up until then. I don't understand how the Mission Winnow is going to help sell cigarettes.
Well, they're like, saying, again, the M logo is subliminal messaging.
I have not bought any cigarettes subliminally.
I don't think it's meant for you.
Okay.
I think this is maybe for someone who has an affinity for Marlboro, this might work as a mind game on them.
It almost seems like they're just so attached to the idea of sponsoring Ferrari, they just cannot let it go.
They need to accept that the world is changing. Yes. You can't smoke cigarettes anywhere.
You can in Europe and Asia. Well,
I mean, anywhere, like, I mean, restaurants, planes, any indoor establishment. Yes, you can smoke outside, but, like, you can't smoke it in any place, like, that's enclosed. Yes.
Did you ever watch Mad Men?
Yes.
Their thing was that was when all the science reports started coming out that cigarettes were bad for you. And so all these cigarette companies were having, like, this, like, moral reckoning. Like, we're fine for people. What are you talking about? I feel like Marlboro never got that message.
No, they're just like, wow, sales are down. Let's add more.
moving on to other kinds of sponsorship, the ones that everyone knows are the pay drivers. When cigarette companies got banned, that's where pay drivers became even more popular. They were always popular, like, from the very beginning, but it began to drive a different kind of pay driver where people with personal sponsors would try to get a seat. So, for example, Checo, no one thinks that he's a pay driver, but as the only Mexican in F1, he came with a lot of Mexican money. Another form of sponsorship is technical partnerships, which we're seeing a lot more of. And I guess it makes the most sense, really, as a two-way street thing. AWS sponsors, I think, F1 as a whole. Microsoft sponsors Alpine. Dell sponsors McLaren. The only non, like, tech company is Petronas, which sponsors Mercedes, but they've really benefited each other in terms of technological advances. That's why they're called Mercedes Petronas.
Yeah, Petronas provides Mercedes with fuel and, like, lubrication supplies.
So title sponsorship, it's the main sponsorship, and you don't only get control of the livery, you also get control of the title. So that's why Mercedes is called Mercedes Petronas. Names change all the time. There's a funny scene in Drive to Survive where both Toto and Lewis keep messing up the name of the team because the title sponsor has changed. So they keep saying the old one, because AMG's been added on, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so they kept getting confused. But yeah, so there's a lot less of the kind of sponsorship we saw in Talladega Nights, though. Like, there's no, like, outright commercials. I haven't seen them in any outright commercials, but maybe that's because we don't live in Europe.
Well, it's Instagram ads now, or, like, social media ads and digital, because, like, I don't know what TV service Charles uses, but he's always putting out videos about what he's streaming, and he apparently is a big fan of Stranger Things.
It's the only show he references, and his only form of advertising it is to, like, a picture of him with a remote control.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know. I can't say, because I don't watch cable, so I have no idea what commercials are like, especially, like, in Europe, but for sure, I think it makes sense that they're moving more to social media.
Yeah. But that also could be this, because that's all we see.
Yeah, that's we don't what I'm see saying. It could be in cable in Europe, which I'll never know what that's like.
Although, no, I'm thinking about, I swear, when I was watching, I don't always watch the F1 TV thing of it when I watch later, and I was watching on ESPN, and I swear there was a commercial with Charles and Carlos that I saw.
I mean, I believe that. It's like, why not? Yeah. Lots of people watch real TV.
Exactly. And I also feel like not using their faces would be a genuine waste.
Well, as Zach Brown said about Carlos has a good face that the sponsors like.
Yep. He's like, this is great for marketing purposes. he knows.
Yep, he does. I think that wraps up Talladega Nights, sponsorships.
Yeah. If you guys have any questions about sponsorships, we'd be happy to answer them next time. If you have any questions about how money works in F1 or any examples of sponsorship that you liked, we can talk about them next time.
Yes.
We also, before we conclude, re-recorded our first episode because it sounded bad, and also we forgot to introduce ourselves.
Yeah, I mean, that was our first, truly our first go.
Yes.
And we just uploaded on the internet.
So we replaced the audio. You can re-download it to hear our updated takes on people and teams. Also, share it with friends who need to get into F1 or who should be listening to our podcast, because who should not be listening to this? And I guess we'll be back later this week with our pre-England episode. Box, box.
Box, box.